Tuesday, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jeremy Birmingham. That is Andrew Ellis. This is Talking Stuff, the Ohio State Recruiting Podcast, where we break down all the latest news, notes, and thoughts on the Ohio State recruiting trail. Andrew, how was your weekend? Good weekend for the NFL draft. What do you think the NFL draft in Cincinnati would be like?
I think going to an NFL draft is like kind of on my bucket list, and I would absolutely love to go to one in Cincinnati.
I wonder what you have to do to become the host city. Like, do you have to just apply for it? Do you have to have decades of sadness and hurt fans, and then all of a sudden a couple really good seasons? Because I think if that's the case, if that's the parameter, then Cincinnati is the perfect spot for it.
Yeah, that could be it. I'm not sure what the criteria are, but that would be awesome to have. Wasn't it in Cleveland recently? I know it was in Nashville because some of my buddies are Titans fans and they went down for it. But I don't know. But I mean, honestly, Detroit looked pretty cool though. Like, I was like, it was crazy how many people were there. It was wild.
Well, last year or next year is in Green Bay. And the prevailing wisdom is that, like, if you're doing those things outdoors, like, Green Bay is pretty risky to do that in mid-April. Like, I'm not sure that's the one I'd want to go to. The Nashville one looks super fun. Detroit, I mean, I know a lot of people. Obviously, I live in Toledo, so it's 40-plus minutes away. A lot of my friends and stuff that I know went and said it was a great time. But, like, I'm just thinking about the nightmare of trying to get out of there on Thursday night on, like, 280,000 people in downtown Detroit at midnight trying to all get back on I-75 when it's like a complete construction nightmare all the time. Sounds just absolutely sick to me. So whatever. Anyway, you want to talk about recruiting or?
Yeah, I guess we can do that. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. Last week, the all the worry, all the consternation, all of the concern was that DeCorian Moore, the number one ranked wide receiver in the country, Duncanville High School in Dallas, Texas, would not make the trip to Ohio State because he was weighing playing in the OT7 tournament in Orlando ahead of the Ohio State visit. People I talked to on Wednesday were like, the visit's still on. As of Thursday, the visit was still on. As of Friday, the visit was starting. And so at that point, it was all systems go for Ohio State. But it is weird in this time. You know, I was at the Under Armour camp, which we'll talk about a little bit more after we talk about DeCorian Moore. But there's a lot of kids being forced to make these decisions about when am I going to visit schools because this 7-on-7 tournament is now taking precedent. And I bet that's driving coaches crazy. But I think it says something about DeCorian Moore and his mother that they were like, you know what, we're going to do what we said we were going to do, which is make the visit to Ohio State, initially scheduled for the 13th, pushed back 2 weeks because of a track meet that he hadn't rescheduled. And I think it does speak something about DeCorian, the LSU commit, that he said, you know what, screw this OT7 tournament, I'm going to Ohio State. By all accounts, everyone I've talked to, including DeCorian, had a great time. All boxes are checked. And now it's a matter of which team can get it over the goal line. LSU, like, is the committed team. But as we've talked about the last few weeks, Andrew, it just doesn't feel like that's the likely outcome.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's going to end up in Austin or Columbus. So getting him in town with his mom, especially with his mom in tow, was a pretty big deal. And we talked about it a few weeks ago. There just wasn't a lot going on campus this weekend. Whereas if he had come for the spring game, you know, it's going to be just chaos. So pretty big deal for Brian Hartline to get him on campus. I assume he's going to do the rounds in June or whenever for the officials. I know Oregon is on the list too. But I'm with you on that. It just seems like right now LSU is like running third at best, maybe even fourth. Are you a little surprised he's still committed, or is that just, is this kind of the trajectory you expected, or what?
He is not, like, despite the fact that he's the number one ranked receiver in the country and all of the things that normally come with that, like, DeCorian Moore is not like a look at me type of kid. This is not a kid that is like super diva-ish, like, I'm actually surprised from his weekend trip to Ohio State that he was tweeting pictures of where he was and posting stuff with his mom, because he's pretty low key about this whole thing. And it's not really his personality to be demonstrative. And I'm actually of the mindset that him putting that out in public was a really good sign for Ohio State, that he was feeling pretty comfortable in Columbus and feeling pretty good about things. I think that eventually, I don't even know if he will ever decommit. Like, I think you could see this as a situation where he's like a go all the way into the season and then just flip to someone else. Or it seems unlikely it went all the way to signing day and then he signed somewhere else. But he's going to take these official visits. I asked him when, if he knew what dates those were going to be yet. Said he doesn't know because they're trying to figure out the OT7 tournaments and the national tournaments in June, which again has to drive coaches crazy because they're trying to figure out, well, we've got 4 weeks to schedule all these officials. And you have players who are trying to figure out when to go do these major events. The events like the opening and the OT7 tournaments, those used to happen at the end of June and in the beginning part of July when there were no college official visits happening. But now all those events have moved up, and so everything kind of mishmashes together. I think that it's a situation where he will definitely be back on campus with Ohio State this summer, again with his parents. And you're talking three visits in about 3 months, and that is pretty telling in this big, in the big picture of things. And one of the things that he told me in a DM was that his mom was actually didn't believe him that the flight from Dallas to Columbus was that short. And the fact that it was actually really a good sign because she was like, oh, this isn't far at all. You know, when you're talking about the other schools that he's considering, especially LSU and Texas, like that's a big sign for Ohio State. So overall, really good. Spent a lot of time with Brian Hartline. Obviously, Ryan Day got involved. Like, this is what you want if you're Ohio State. You just want to have a shot. And I think that it's putting the Buckeyes in a unique position with the rest of their receiver recruiting because they obviously feel pretty good about Jamie French. They feel very good about Vernell Brown. And with Desi Jones committed, like, you're probably only able to take three more. And I think you might feel so good about Tekorian Moore and really like your chances that it automatically pushes guys like Taylen Taylor, guys like Phillip Bell, guys like Quincy Porter down the list a little bit. And so I think you'll see other schools maybe make some moves with those. I don't want to call them second tier guys, but let's be realistic. That's what they are. There's the really, really talented trio of Vernell Brown and Jamie French and Tekorian Moore that are at the top. And so you'll start to see these other schools make moves for these other guys. But like Ryan Hartline, there's no reason for him to not go as hard as he can after the top player in the country at that position, because he's proven time and time again that he can win that battle.
Yeah. And the proximity to Texas is obviously going to be a concern, but so for the next few months, probably official visits, maybe stay committed to LSU, maybe take some more visits this fall. And then I guess just kind of see where he signs in December. Is that kind of where you're going with this one?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's probably right. I think what's interesting is that guys like Tekorian, you know, you have Devin Sanchez committed in the state of Texas, obviously, to Ohio State. If the Buckeyes can find a way to pull off a coup for like Riley Pettijohn or something like that, maybe a player like Tekorian, knowing that there's a weight that he can add to the class for a player like David Sanders or helping build the rest of the offensive class around them, maybe it makes sense to make something happen early. But Ohio State's not going to push for that, and they're going to let things unfold as they naturally do. And they're in it. I mean, very, very much in it, just like they're very much in it for David Sanders, who was visited by Justin Fry on Tuesday. Like, they're in it. They're definitely making strides. And for a player that 8 months ago, nobody was thinking Ohio State had any contact with, they are very much in the conversation for Tekorian Moore.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And real quick, with this Quincy Porter kid, we don't talk about him a ton. You said he's probably like in maybe that next tier. Is that correct? Like maybe the Phillip Bell tier?
Yeah, I mean, there's the only real difference with Quincy Porter from Bergen Catholic in New Jersey is that he's like a almost 6'4" type wide receiver. So he's significantly different physically than Tekorian Moore, than Desi Jones, than Jamie French, even, who's about 6'2". And Vernell Brown, who's about 6'1". So, like, you could almost put him in a different category because Phillip Bell, Taylen Taylor, all these guys are like the same type of player. Where Porter, I've heard some people describe him, I don't like to always use this term, but it because it's sort of cliche, but I've heard him described as like a poor man's Marvin Harrison, like that type of athlete, that type of wide receiver. So he's high on the list. And don't get me wrong, Ohio State, if Quincy Porter called Ohio State and said, I want to commit today, I think they'd say yes and then figure the rest out. But they're not like in a position to be demonstrative and pushy for that, because it just doesn't make sense for where things are with everyone else. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks for Brian Hartline. Taylen Taylor said he was going to take his official visit on June 21st. There's still obviously the conversation about Kalik Lockett and him taking an official visit, whether that's up in the air or not. So all focus seems to be on that top three of DeCorey Moore, Jamie French, and Vernell Brown, but there are other guys who will be in town that Brian Hartline is going to have to figure out, like, how do I balance these things? So balance is the name of the game, and that's why I like Eli Lee at linebacker, Andrew, because he's balanced. And that's a terrible segue, and I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry. Under Armour camp came to Ohio on Sunday in Canton, Ohio. Not quite as like talent rich as normal because of a number of factors. Guys like Trey McNutt, guys like Albert Hill, the 2026 cornerback from Akron Hoban, guys like Tavian St. Clair were all down in Florida at that OT7 event. Now that Ohio football players are allowed to participate in those things. Some guys like in the state of Ohio, the top probably five offensive linemen in the class of 2026. By that, I mean Maxwell Riley, Sam Greer, Will Conroy, Deron Parks, and kid who's I'm constantly forgetting his name, and it's not meant to be the case. Adam,
offensive lineman.
Yeah, Adam Guthrie. Sorry. So like none of those guys were there, and so like a lot of what we normally get out of that camp, which is a real first glance at the next group up, was somewhat muted. But Eli Lee looked great. Ohio State obviously has a commitment from him. He has been looked over by a lot of people. He's still not nationally ranked on Rivals. He's still like the 27th ranked player in the state or something like that, according to Rivals.com, which maybe it's 17th. Either way, it's too low. Like at 6'3", 225 pounds, and I'm not like that kid has bigger thighs than any high school junior I've ever seen in my life. Like I was looking at him and I was like, Eli, how is this possible? And I asked him, like, what are you squatting? And he said, oh, just over 650 pounds, which that's insane to me. Like, that's nuts for a 16-year-old. And he said when he was a freshman, he was squatting like 140 pounds. So he's putting in a ton of work. He's been at Ohio State all spring. Like the comparisons to Tommy Eichenberg are very apt, I think, for what type of player he can be. But he is physically going to be a much stronger player at the point of attack. Like but still maintain that, like, I will die for this mentality, which Tommy had. So really encouraged by what we saw out of him in pass coverage. And again, just physically, the way he was moving around. But the two players that really stood out to me the most, other than Eli Lee, were Justin Hill and Victor Singleton, a 2026 cornerback from Toledo Central Catholic. And Justin Hill, like, I think watching him on Sunday has completely changed the way I view him as a prospect. And I totally understand where Ohio State sees him as the jack slash edge type. I do not think that he's capable of being like a traditional outside linebacker, but I don't think that's what he wants to be. And I don't think that's what he's going to do best. And so that really does explain to me why it feels like this recruitment has been stuck in neutral, for lack of a better term, for the last couple of months. Because, Andrew, Ohio State doesn't play the jack position that they are recruiting him for.
Yeah,
how can the kid feel comfortable and confident in saying, I know exactly what my role is, when they're not using it?
Yeah, no, that's the big question here. And I honestly don't really know. Obviously, I know Alabama uses guys like Will Anderson and those types. I don't know about Oregon and what their usage of that type of player is. I know Oregon's high up on his list. But just seeing that kind of viral clip of him absolutely annihilating a Notre Dame commit.
A 6'8", 300-pound Notre Dame
commit. Yeah.
A legitimate 6'8", Owen Strabig. Like, he was – that was ridiculous.
Yeah, a very large human. I guess I would like to think Jim Knowles, James Laurinaitis, Larry Johnson can get this kid to just know you're going to come to Columbus and we're going to tell you to just wreak havoc on the quarterback. Whether that's the Jack or whatever, maybe they use CJ Hicks a bit in a Jack role this year. I have no idea. But after seeing some of that and just seeing some of the write-ups about him, like, you can't let that kid go to Oregon or Alabama or anywhere besides Columbus.
Yeah, the argument from the Ohio State perspective is pretty simple, which is we don't really play this position because we don't have a player like you to play it. So they are going to try to sprinkle that in, I think, this year with CJ Hicks, with Mitchell Melton, maybe with Arvell Reese. But Justin Hill at 6'3", 220 pounds, like 225, he is a legitimate speed rushing edge that was unblockable in one-on-one situations on Sunday. Unblockable. Not able to be blocked. The dude was just terrorizing people. Now, in Owen Strabig's defense, who was also very good and a player that really caught my eye, and I wrote about him in my story on Rivals on Tuesday, that I think Ohio State needs to make sure they offer him. They have been in contact, but they haven't offered. So if you want to have a chance at flipping an offensive tackle commit from Notre Dame, I think you have to offer. That's sort of paramount. But Justin, so the fun thing is about this camp, because RJ Day was there and working out. So even though he was not on the initial list on Friday, so it was a day of registration. So because of that, Ryan Day was able to be there. And watching Ryan Day's eyes light up when Justin Hill was just dominating people was something to behold. And I tweeted about it on Sunday after that clip went viral of, I think it was Bill Kerlick's clip. And the best part to me was watching Justin not get up and be all in his face. And it reminded me of the first time I saw Justin Hill, which was about 18 months ago. He was at Ohio State for a visit. And myself and Bill and Austin were doing a snap judgments from a spring practice. And I saw this 6'3" dude walk by with the Sideshow Bob haircut. And I was like, I don't know who that is, but he looks like a dude. And he stopped and picked up three pieces of trash that were on the ground of the Woody and threw it away. And I was like, that's a great kid. Like, he didn't have to do that. So then I coupled that with what we saw this week from the post viral clip, lack of celebration, and then throw in the mix that he's like a bad mamma jamma on the field. Like, Justin Hill, I think that there is a real argument, and I can see how people could view it the other way, between Tavian St. Clair and Carter Lowe and even Trey McNutt. The three most valuable positions in sports, in football, are quarterback, offensive line, and edge rusher, okay? Right? Like, I think we can all agree on that. Justin Hill, I think you could easily make him the number one player in Ohio in any ranking based on what he's done on film, the size, the projection, the way he tests, everything else. And then you couple that with the fact that he's like a great kid that everyone loves. Like, to bring it all home, like, you cannot lose him in Ohio, period. And so whatever the Buckeyes have to do, a lot of this is going to be about how much does he trust Ryan Day? How much does he trust James Laurinaitis? How much does he trust Jim Knowles? And does that translate into saying, yes, on July 3rd, I'm picking Ohio State, even though they're not exactly putting out defensively what I need them to, because they don't have it. So, because you can't prove it between now and July 3rd. So it is going to be fascinating. Oregon and Alabama are very real. That is not like me joking around and saying watch for the Gators here or anything like that. Like, that's a real concern, because those two defenses play the 3-4. That's where he is best going to be used in that role. I think Ohio State, sorry to keep rambling about this, but I think one of the biggest problems Ohio State has in deploying that type of defense and deploying the Jack is that Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau are so good that you can't really take them off the field. And so heading into 2025, when the defensive end position is not quite as ready-made, I think may actually allow Jim Knowles to experiment a little bit more with players like Arvell Reese and CJ Hicks and Justin Hill in that spot. And so I think that they're basically saying, trust us, it's coming. Why would we take JT off the field? Why would we take Jack off the field? Like, we can't really do that. But I think this season actually sets up in a way that Ohio State can experiment a lot in those first six games. And so I really hope that they do.
I think months ago, or early on in the cycle, we said that Carter Lowe was the must get for the class. And that was before Tavian St. Clair exploded into a five-star. Obviously, they got Lowe. I would say now, even with two edge guys in the fold, just based on what I've seen in the highlights and stuff, I would say Justin Hill is the must get guy now, especially in the state, maybe anywhere defensively.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I've thought that before. His film is really good, but then you see him in this role, and then you start to envision what he could be in that edge spot, and it's just too, it's, you can't let him leave the state. And you certainly can't let him go play at Oregon. Like, that can't happen. Moving on. Speaking of guys that, Ohio State doesn't want to let leave the state, running back recruiting is getting weird. One of the things that really came out of the Under Armour camp on Sunday, when Bo Jackson and Marquise Davis were both there, even though Bo did not work out because he's getting ready to have a shoulder surgery on a shoulder that he said he actually injured last baseball season, and he played through his entire football season with a torn labrum. So there was a lot of concern that maybe he's not tough enough, or he's had some injury issues, but for a kid who fought through an entire football season with a torn labrum, that's pretty telling of that. What he's trying to do for his team. He wants to have that surgery now so he can be ready to go in his senior year. Obviously losing almost his entire baseball season now, which he loves, and he's really good at baseball. But all that to say, Marquise Davis was there, did work out, and it seems pretty clear from the buzz around Marquise that Ohio State is not even in the conversation for him at this point. Ohio State has not really tried to get back into it. Carlos Lachman, I think, is supposed to be at his school either today or tomorrow on Wednesday and to watch their workout sessions, and maybe that'll change things. But I think that there's a real chance Marquise Davis is off the board by the end of this week. And you know what I think is weird, Andrew? I'm going to tell you what I think is weird, Andrew. When media members of schools of the blue bloods, right? If Ohio State's recruiting someone and you and I are talking and we start to randomly say okay, but really watch out for Auburn here. Watch out for Auburn. This is kind of weird, but because no one really thinks that Auburn should get the kid over Ohio State, right? But then we're like, this is, there has been, despite a bevy of crystal balls and future casts and RPM predictions for Marquise Davis to Kentucky in the last 10 days. I'm sorry, to Michigan in the last 10 days. Have you noticed how many of those have come with the caveat of, but watch out for Kentucky? I'm just telling you, I think something is in the works here.
I have noticed that. You think that Kentucky is a bigger player than most people think? Is that what you're alluding to?
Yeah, I'm just going to say I think that I don't care to make official predictions. It's not my business, especially about schools I don't cover. But I think that there's a very real chance that he picks Kentucky and not Michigan, as everyone has just assumed in the last couple of weeks. Whereas Ohio State is pretty much out of it for Marquise Davis, the buzz on Jordan Davison, Ohio State's top target at running back in the Tony Alford era and in the Carlos Lachman era, has been that Texas is pretty much out of the situation for him. He visited Oregon this weekend. So did De'Aaron Hill, who's another one of those guys that Carlos Lachman's been very involved with. And now there are predictions for De'Aaron Hill to go to Oregon. And nothing has changed from anybody on Jordan Davis in Ohio State. So it seems like we're heading toward what we talked about last week and in previous shows, the likely scenario here for Ohio State is Jordan Davison and Bo Jackson, and then you figure out if you can take a third somewhere. But that sure is, that third is not going to be Marquise Davis, and it doesn't look like it'll be D'Air Hill. So now you start to sort it out from there.
So with Davison, we've talked, there's like not a definitive timeline. I think he's just said he's going to announce when he's ready to announce. Do you, and I know we're in like a quiet period now or whatever the terminology is, do you think like he's going to get back to Columbus to kind of meet with Carlos Lachlan again now that he's in his new habitat or whatever? Or is that something to be on the lookout for?
His official visit or?
Well, like, I don't know. I mean, official visits aren't going to be until June. Like, he just kind of showed, like, I don't think we were expecting him to.
4 weeks from now.
Yeah, and that's
official
true.
Official visits start 4 weekends from now for Ohio State. So I think that you will see him take official visits to Ohio State, probably Oregon, probably Alabama, and maybe be done with it. That's what I think. So I would expect a decision from him end of June, and I wouldn't think of it anytime sooner than that. Same with Bo Jackson. Like, and I don't want people to just assume that Ohio State is a lock for Bo Jackson either, because in talking to him and people around him this weekend, like, the Georgia and Alabama thing is pretty real, especially Alabama. Like, he seems to be very enamored by what they do. So with the running backs. So I think he'll end up at Ohio State. I think the fact that he's going to have this surgery and maybe lose some time could push Bama and other schools to like extend their search and find other guys. And maybe it will give him a reason to say, hey, I need to lock in a commitment close to home. Maybe, I don't know. That's just a ballparking, but it's not like a lock. It's not, that's not a pun I was trying to make. It's not a locked thing. Okay. For Ohio State, but that is certainly where it's trending.
Yeah, good point on Davison. I forgot tomorrow's already May, so we're getting.
Gonna be May.
I knew one of us was going to do that, and it wasn't going to be me. So thanks for taking that one from me.
Yeah, I'm here to support your vision, your goal for the show. Speaking of visions, I did mention earlier that Justin Fry is in North Carolina on Tuesday, visited David Sanders. David Sanders is an old name on the Ohio State recruiting board, but talking about guys like Owen Strabig out of Wisconsin, the Notre Dame commit, we have a new offer out to Andrew Stargell, a three-star guard from Roswell, Georgia, teammate of five-star offensive tackle Josh Petty in Georgia, and Henry Fanuku, another 6'4", 300-pound offensive lineman from Texas who was offered by Ohio State on Sunday. It's pretty clear the Buckeyes are starting to expand the recruiting board on the offensive line. And the question is, how many do they decide to take? We've seen Enoch Vamahi enter the transfer portal over these last couple hours. Not surprising, really. He was not going to make an impact for Ohio State this year, but he's also not somebody who is going to be on the roster next year, so it doesn't affect what is the potential number for Justin Fry. I have said before that I think that the goal is three players in this class on the offensive line. I think that they are going to end up stretching that to four with two tackles and two guards, or two tackles and one guard, one just center guard combo guy, whatever. But it does seem like Justin Fry is starting to expand that reach. One of the posters on the OhioState.Rivals.com message board asked me last week, like, why do the Buckeyes have so few offers out to offensive linemen? They had, at that point, 23 offers out in the class of 2025 to offensive linemen. And, like, Alabama had, like, 46. Georgia had, like, 44. Michigan had 44 or something like that. So I asked, like, why that was the case. I asked some people around the Ohio State program, like, what the value of that is. And it sort of became what I expected, which is they think that if you cast a more narrow net, you are going to build more real relationships with kids. You're going to have a tighter bond. Kids are going to feel prioritized. They're going to feel like they are, special. And I understand that entirely. But what happens is that Avery Gatch is going to commit to Michigan on Friday, right? So then, like, what did 18 months of recruiting Avery Gatch, who you prioritized and made it important and offered him well before Michigan did, what does that matter if you lose out on the guys at the end? What does it matter if Brandon Baker feels like a really good relationship with you if he picks Texas? What does it matter if Jordan Seaton trusts you as a human being more than he trusts other people if he ends up picking Colorado? So I think that it does put Ohio State and specifically Justin Fry in like a bit of a pickle, you know? And I think that it's changing is what I'm saying. I think you'll see another handful of offers over these next few weeks. And one of them, we'll talk about Jake Cook in Ohio, who I think, like, really, we're talking about the Under Armour camp on Sunday, like, eye-opening experience to see Jake Cook, the Louisville commit, be a totally different person than he was in the previous 3 years that I've seen him. So I think you can see the board change.
Remind me, is Cook's an interior guy or is he a tackle? I can't remember.
6 foot four, 295, 298 pound. He's going to be an interior guy. He's committed to Louisville from Westerville North. He has been visiting Ohio State and camping at Ohio State for the last 3 years. He's been there probably a dozen times, if not 15 times. Jake Cook is the type of player who, and I'm going to say this in a way that it's not meant to be a shot at anybody. Because it can be taken as a shot either way. He is the type of guy that would have been committed to Ohio State months ago if Jim Trussell was still the head coach at Ohio State. Like, he would have been offered early. He would have been committed. He's huge. And that's fine. But he's a 3-star offensive lineman committed to Louisville. So I don't know why it's necessary to go offer Andrew Stargell in Georgia, who's a 3-star guy. Now, again, Ohio State's evaluations don't give a crap about national rankings and stuff like that. But there was, and I'm not an offensive line evaluator by any stretch, but Jake Cook won the offensive line MVP on Sunday. The kid has completely changed his body. He looks like a Big Ten offensive lineman. He has a showcase at a school on the 6th. So Sunday, I think it is. Is that the 6th? I don't know. Not really good with dates. And I hope Justin Fry's there because they need to see him again. So it'll be interesting. He is the type of person who, if Ohio State shows any interest over these next couple of weeks and just a call to say, hey, we would love to see you one more time, he will make sure he gets to Ohio State and camps or works out privately or does whatever they need to in order to have that shot at fulfilling his dream. Because it's like all he's ever wanted is to be a Buckeye. And those are the guys that, like, you have to love when they succeed.
Yeah, my thoughts on this are the same as everybody on the forum. Like, I am all in favor of them expanding the board. You said when you alluded last week to it possibly being 3, the target number, and maybe them stretching it to 4. I didn't love hearing that. Like, I'd like to hear it as 4 as the target number and maybe stretching it to 5. But let's say they do offer Cook, and then let's say they, Davenport gets that offer. I mean, that could be 2 more guys right there. So you'd have a 3-man group of Ohio guys and then just keep swinging at the fences with David Sanders and whoever else. But I hope they can get that to at least 4 with one more national name. Cause Carter Lowe is like a 5-star type. If he wasn't in Ohio, everybody would be doing cartwheels about his commitment. So I would like to see it get to 5-4 at the minimum.
I just think in this new world of college football and the way that rosters are changing and all of the stuff that's happening all the time, If Brian Hartline and the wide receivers are, the plan is to take 4 every single year, the offensive line needs to be taking 5 every year. I don't, because there's so many busts at the offensive line. Development track is so long. The offensive line has so many transfers. Like, I don't know. You cannot take less than 4 in a class on the offensive line in my mind. Like, you just can't do it.
Especially in a class where they could sign like 28 guys, like you said before, with all those guys leaving. Like, I would hope they would get that number up to at least 4, if not maybe 5.
Yeah. And again, I know that the other perspective is, well, if we fill up a class with developmental in-state guys, then the national guys will look at it and be told, oh, they've got all these commitments. Why are you going to go there? They're going to play the kids from Ohio. Like that's always been used against, oh, if they have Ohio kids, they have to play them first, like, which is obviously garbage and not true. So like, I don't know exactly what Ohio State needs to swing for the fences, and they need to take, you know, home run cuts. And I totally understand that. But when you have players in Ohio, like Nolan Davenport, like Jake Cook, like it does make sense to me to say, let's go get him. Now, the flip side of that, Andrew, is what we saw in the class of 2020. Okay. Like when you have Trey LaRue and Jacob James who get offered in January and commit right away and then never develop. And then what happens? Then you have people on the other side saying, why did you offer this guy? So like, there is a happy medium here somewhere. And to me, that happy medium is here we are. Junior season is over for these guys. They've got big time offers. One of them's committed to a Power Five school in Louisville. You say to those guys, we want you on camp in June for your final evaluation. Come in here and show us what you've done. Show us how you've grown. And then you can say, or then you can say yes or no and walk away without any sort of like regrets either way. Because I think what happened with the LaRue and Jacob James class, and Jacob James, I still think is going to be a fine football player. Like he's got a, you know, great background and a hardworking kid, just didn't work out at Ohio State. But you offer those guys in January before they've had a chance to go through the evaluation period in summer workouts in their senior years. It, you know, they almost had that happen with Mark Knave a year ago, right? Like you can't rest on that. So I do understand both sides of it, but like from a purely number standpoint, that number has to be four or five every year on the offensive line. Has to be.
But when we say swing for the fences with offensive line at this point, who are we really talking about besides David Sanders? Are there guys that I'm forgetting about that are like highly rated? I know we talked about the Stargell offer and stuff like that, but I feel like that's the huge fish that's out there right now. But maybe there's other guys.
When you're talking offensive tackle, it's clearly David Sanders. We will see if they get involved or try to get more involved with Owen Strabig. Like I said, the Notre Dame commitment. I don't know. Like you're not going to take both of those guys. So I do understand also the decision to say, hey, let's see where we are with Sanders. Maybe, you know, I mentioned it, I think, on our show 2 weeks ago, like there's a chance that there's a mid-May visit coming for David Sanders. That's going to be a pre-official visit trip. If that happens, then you start to feel really good. And maybe you don't have to go chasing somebody else. The Josh Petty conversation, the offensive lineman, the five-star from Roswell, who's got, I think, 7 official visits scheduled for the summer. Ohio State's not one of them. So like you're not really in it. So how long do you stay taking those home run cuts until you start to realize that maybe I'm not timing up this pitcher very well? At guard, it's guys like Javon McFadden. It's Joshua Blackston. It's like you need, I think what you have with Carter Lowe, if you can go out and sign Carter Lowe, Javon McFadden, Nolan Davenport, Jake Cook, and David Sanders, that's a grand slam class, right? Grand slam. So I don't think you have to walk away from anybody or push anybody else off. And I think in state, you can tell those kids, we see you. We understand that, you know, this is your dream and we've seen you working hard. Here's your opportunity. It reminds me of what Ohio State did with Terry McLaurin back in the class of 2014. Like they told him, come to summer camp, earn your offer. He tried. And first time he camped, it was not good enough. And Urban Meyer said, come back in 2 weeks, fix this, this, and this. And he did. And then he came back and got his offer, committed immediately, and like the rest is history. Now, I'm not saying these kids are going to come visit twice, especially a kid like Jake Cook, who has been on campus, as I said, a dozen times. But I think when it comes to in-state kids, if you just give them the opportunity, you open the book and you say, here's exactly what we need from you. Can you do this? And if they can, then you know that you've got a kid who's really desiring that offer. Like Victor Singleton, the class of 2026 cornerback that I mentioned briefly earlier. Like Ohio State has told him, we need to see you at 175 pounds when you come to camp. He's about 160 that he played at last year in his sophomore year for Central Catholic. Now, I don't know why they put like a weight number on something like that, because the kid can flat out cover and he's really, really good. And he checked in on Sunday at 168 pounds. I don't know that he's going to gain another 7 pounds in the next 5 weeks before he comes to camp at Ohio State, especially as he's, you know, doing other sports and stuff like that. But like the kid can play, and you set a goal and he's going to do everything he can to reach it. So like, if you just give them that opportunity, generally it turns out okay, because those kids are the ones that are going to absolutely kill themselves for a chance to play at Ohio State. And that still matters. And I think in some ways, maybe it matters more than ever in a world of college sports where there is no loyalty anymore. But I don't know. I'll get off the soapbox. Speaking of loyalty, Andrew, what do you think about Ohio State commitments taking visits to Oregon for the spring game?
I think in general, that's a bad look. I think in this case, it's what we've expected for months now, just being frank about it. So I, not the best look, but also not a surprise by any means.
This case, he means, of course, Blake would be the Ohio State four-star cornerback commit from Baltimore, who visited Oregon for their spring game over the weekend. There was some buzz generating pretty much right after Ohio State spring game, where Blake Woodby was, that Oregon was moving up the list for him. Oregon has done a really good job recruiting Baltimore. One of his teammates of a year ago, whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce, a cornerback, is out at Oregon. And so I think it's something to pay attention to. And I'm going to say, I don't ever want to put down any kid or disparage anybody. With Devin Sanchez and Naeem Offord in the class, whatever happens at cornerback number three for Ohio State in the class of 2025 is somewhat irrelevant. That said, Blake Woodby is the slot projection in this class, and they're looking for somebody to fill that spot. He's a top 40 player, according to Rivals.com. A lot of upside. So you're not in a position where you tell a kid like that, oh, piss off, we don't want you. But you are also going to be realistic and say, hey, if you want to look elsewhere, go ahead. I do think it's interesting, especially with Oregon, however, because right now they are in the Big Ten. Okay, like they're now in the Big Ten. So when Peyton Woodyard, the former five-star safety from California, who Ohio State thought they had a really good shot at last year, who's committed to Georgia and signed with Alabama, when he enters the transfer portal on Monday night and everyone just assumes he's going to USC, another Big Ten school, and it's Oregon that is probably going to be the team to land him. Like, Oregon is a real problem, and I don't know that you want any – that's why, like, Fahim Delane, like, is between Ohio State and Oregon probably. Trey McNutt, very involved with Oregon as well. It's not a situation – like, Oregon's a bit of a problem. Those plucky little ducks are putting their nose in the business, and it's annoying. But as far as Blake Woodby goes specifically, I wanted to bring him up on the show because I do think that people, if something were to happen and he were not going to be a member of the Ohio State class, it would, like, you'd look at it from a strictly numbers / rankings perspective, and you could see that and be like, kind of, oh, what the hell? But I don't think it's something that Ohio State, as long as Devin Sanchez and Naeem Offord are both there, like, I think whatever happens below them is you take it with a smile.
Yeah, and I mean, Woodby hasn't played a lot of football, just, you know, due to injuries and whatnot. Yeah. So obviously plays at a powerhouse program, and we'll see what he can do this fall. But I am, again, not surprised or bothered by this trip to Eugene. So, yeah.
He's a really good athlete, a lot of upside, but again, like, I don't know exactly what the fit is. And if you look at Ohio State with like someone Miles Lockhart at who looks to be the next really in line at slot, like, I think you might be okay in that position. We'll see what happens. Again, this has the potential to be a very large Ohio State recruiting class. So you're not going to push anyone out, but you also are going to say, hey, it's April. If you want to go visit somewhere else, and we're not the right fit for you, let us know. So that's where that is with Blake Woodby, who has visited Oregon. Andrew Ellis, we are moving into the 4-minute offense. What do you got to wrap up this episode of Talking Stuff?
Not a ton. The offensive line talk was kind of a big thing for me, and we touched on that pretty much earlier. Jamie French has set a number of official visits. Tennessee, it seems like Florida State's out. And Ohio State's not one of the ones that he has set. I saw some concern on the internet from the Ohio State side about that. Just a little bit of concern. Is that anything to be troubled about whatsoever?
Yeah. I think the intention is for Jamie to take his official visit to Ohio State in the season. So in the old days, we were like, oh, he's the final official visit. Like, that's what you want. I don't think that there's any real concern there. Texas is probably the team I would worry about the most when it comes to Jamie French, although I know Tennessee is a real threat as well. But I think Ohio State's advantage in that recruitment is considerable, and I think it's probably good to let him visit these other schools in the summer, let things level out, and then get him on campus for a game day visit at Ohio State, which he has not done to my knowledge. He's been there for the spring game before, but not a regular game. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think he's been there for a regular game. So the relationship there is excellent, and it's not a concern.
Got it. I'm only going to ask this name because we never talk about him, probably because he doesn't ever talk about recruiting. But Zahir Mathis, defensive end commit, just quiet kid, handles things differently. Don't hear a lot about him. Is that why? Is that basically the reason why we've literally mentioned him like one time in the last year on this podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I've had an ongoing regular conversation with Zahir on social media for a while. Like, he's personable. He just doesn't care about all of the other stuff. He did visit for the spring game. He was at Ohio State for the spring game. He's an interesting player/prospect because, like, he's about 6'4" and I think he's about 200 pounds. So maybe, like, we had a lot of back and forth about Booker Pickett a year ago and, like, what is his role? And I think I look at Zahir Mathis and I see the same type of player. I don't exactly know what the fit is. But athletically, he's really gifted, but I don't know that he's, I need to see him at like 230 pounds real soon to have any idea what his future is at Ohio State. But I know the relationship between him and Larry Johnson is very strong, and there's no concerns at this point about his recruitment.
Gotcha. Last 2025 question, then I got one for 2026 real quick. So Eli Lee, TJ Alford committed at linebacker. What's the kid who just committed to Missouri? McClendon. What is it? What's the name?
Dante McClellan from Canton McKinley.
Dante McClellan. Was he at the camp you were at, or was he at the 7-on-7? I can't remember who was where last week.
He was at the Under Armour camp. I mean, that camp was on the campus of his high school. So, he was there on Sunday. He looked really good. He looks like a linebacker. And I think that he's developing the way you want. Again, another player, like, if you just told him, here's what we need to see from you, then maybe you have a chance to pull off a flip. But it seems like all focus is on Riley Pettijohn out of Texas to be that third linebacker at this
point. Well, the odds of them getting that kid from Texas are pretty small, if we're being honest. So maybe it's a late offer watch for the kid that you mentioned, whose name I already forgot, that's committed to Missouri.
Dante McClellan.
Yeah, I keep wanting to call him Jeremiah, kid last year that flipped to freaking Oregon.
I think Dante has a lot of the tools you're looking for to be a really successful big time linebacker. And I think if he ends up sticking with Missouri, which I don't see why he wouldn't unless Ohio State came offering, I think he's going to be the type of player that four or five years from now, we see him getting drafted in like day two of the NFL draft. Like, he's that type of athlete. And he's, you know, you can't sign everyone. I understand that. But, like, you hate to see really talented kids from Ohio leave the state. But if they do leave the state, at least he's going to Missouri and not Michigan or Penn State or Oregon.
Right, right. Just kind of last thing. Haven't talked a lot about 2026 quarterbacks lately. Has anybody even been on campus lately? Or is it just kind of who knows at this point still with whatever's going on there?
Everyone was pretty much on campus that they've offered in throughout spring, but they are really gearing up to bring just everyone back in June to see them in person and get them on camp settings and go from there. One of my two biggest like names that I had on my list for the Under Armour camp this week that I really wanted to see in Canton were defensive end Damian Shanklin, who did not show up because he got a flat tire on the way there. And quarterback Jonas Williams from Illinois, class of 2026 quarterback Ohio State's offered. He did not show up. So very frustrating from that perspective that we didn't get to see either one of those guys. But I assume we'll see Jonas Williams back on campus in the summer, along with every other of the thing now nine quarterbacks they've offered in the class of 2026. There's no hurry. There is no rush. There's a lot of these guys outside of Jared Curtis, who I think projects as the clear cut number one guy in that class. Like 2 through 10 are pretty, you know, interchangeable. There is a quarterback in the class of 2026 from North Carolina. His name is like Faison Brandon, who is at Grimsley High School in Greensboro, North Carolina. 247 Sports has him as not only their number one quarterback at this point, but the number one player in the class. Ohio State is supposed to be getting down there to see him throw in these next couple of weeks. If that happens, you'll see him get an offer. He's 6'4", 175 pounds more. I mean, like a pretty real deal type of dude. So that is going to be an expanding list for sure. So
watch them throw in June and maybe slowly start to narrow it down, and then watch them this fall and
get everyone prioritized. Get them on campus. See who blows you away, and then narrow down and prioritize and hope to have a guy in the class by probably October is what I would imagine, because you do need that quarterback. But it is a good class at quarterback in 2026. So, you know, not maybe like elite class. Maybe you don't have a number of elite guys, but you do have some pretty solid players, and they're not going to need, I don't think, an elite player at that position at that point, because you've got obviously the potential of Julian Sain and Tavian St. Clair, and you always want to sign as good a player as you can, but you also need to be realistic.
Got it. That
I got. Is anything else?
No, that's all I have. I got to mow some grass. So
I did that earlier today and it felt great. Beautiful.
Long. It's just the best. Yeah. I love mowing grass. Just listen to a podcast or listen to a new Taylor Swift album, whatever. Got to do it.
What do you think about the Tortured Poets Department?
I think it's a great album. Like my initial Taylor, it's an elite album. Great. I think. Wow. Yeah, you really do. Like I got three nieces between like 12 and 18. So like I was kind of pretending to be interested in her years ago. And then like I started listening to her, and she's legit talented and has awesome music. So I've got no shame.
All right, you're not going to, I'm not trying to shame you for listening to Taylor Swift. I am absolutely a Taylor Swift fan. I think this album is like, if it's a 13 or 14 song album, it's probably great. Instead, it's 31 songs, and I think like some of it is just unnecessary, but whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, it happens. Not every swing is a home run, and that's fine. Okay. I'm sure the next album, like a Folklore and Evermore, are two of my favorite albums. I mean, of any person that's ever been made in history. So outside of Cracked Review by Hootie and the Blowfish.
Wow. Classic.
That's probably that album's great.
That's the first album I ever owned. I got it for Christmas and God, whatever year that was. First album I ever had on my 3-disc changer that I got. And just seriously, one of the best albums of all time.
My high school girlfriend, her best friend, Sarah, bought me Cracked Rear View for my birthday present in 1995. And I really owe a lot to Sarah. That was such a fantastic album.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Hootie and the Blowfish, for everything you've done for us. And thank you to all of you who have entertained this episode of Talking Stuff, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get the stuff. We appreciate you watching and listening, and we hope that you'll continue to do so. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, please do that. Rate, review, tell us what we're doing okay. And, you know, if you have suggestions on how we can get better, we always listen to that too. So, for Andrew Ellis, I'm Jeremy Birmingham. Thank you very much. We will see you next time.